Hello, Tigers. It's me, Finn, from Offbeat Oregon, with a special announcement, followed by a special feature, because, like I said last week, as a heavy podcast listener, I hate it when an episode of a show pops up and it's nothing but the host shooting his mouth off about something that maybe I care about it, maybe I don't. In this case, if you don't live relatively close to the Polk County Fairgrounds, you probably won't care about it. But I'm going to make you listen to this anyway because I'm just mean like that. The special feature is a reading from Conversations with Bullwhackers, Mule Skinners, Pioneers, Prospectors, 49ers, Indian Fighters, Trappers, Ex-Barkeepers, Authors, Preachers, Poets, Near Poets, and All Sorts and Conditions of Men. Whew, that was a mouthful. By Fred Lockley. Now, Mr. Lockley was a legendary Portland Journal reporter and columnist with a column titled Conversations with the Journal Man, which ran regularly on the editorial page for about 20 years, starting in 1911. Some of his most colorful accounts got collected in 1981 into this two-volume set by Mike Helm, which is what I'm pulling this from, and that's titled... I'm not going to repeat the name of the title. I don't have enough breath. I have two of them this time. One of them is super short, and the other one is a little bit longer. I'm going to do the short one first, then I'm going to put the announcement in the middle, like the meat in a sandwich, and finish off with the longer one. Robert M. Veach, pioneer of 1854, Cottage Grove, Oregon. When I reached Feather River, I was broke, save for a 10-cent shin plaster, which I was saving for seed. I camped near the cabin of a settler named Cochran. He pronounced it Cowhorn. He invited me to stop with him. I refused. He urged me, so I said, I only have 10 cents, and I never buy anything I can't pay for, and what's more, your wife wouldn't want me in the house. I am alive with graybacks. Graybacks, by the way, are fleas. He said, take your clothes off and lay them on a large anthill. Take a good swim in the river. In a few hours, you can wear your clothes again. I put my clothes upon a large anthill, and when I went to get them a few hours later, the ants had eaten every grayback and everything that would become a grayback. Oregon Journal, July 21st, 1922. So that's good advice if you ever have to get rid of fleas the old-fashioned way, and a little glimpse into the rougher time. Now, give me 5 minutes to lay my announcement on you, and then I'll get back to it. At the end of this month, Friday, May 29th, 2026, 7 p.m., I will be joining several colleagues to put on a pop history fundraiser to benefit the Polk County Fairgrounds. The fairgrounds is threatened with closure due to some obsolete electrical stuff that they cannot afford to upgrade. So we're trying to help save the place. If they have to shut down, they'll have to bring the electrical up to modern code. Nothing will be grandfathered in. So basically, if they have to shut the fairgrounds facilities down, it ain't coming back. And Polk County needs a fairgrounds facility. The fundraiser is a presentation of the history and stories of Camp Adair, the stories from what was for a few years Oregon's third largest city and the place where a whole lot of American soldiers learned the skills they'd need to stay alive in Europe and the Pacific. On the stage will be yours truly, along with author and pop historian Bruce Haney, author of Oregon Moonshine and A Definitive History of Boring Oregon, archaeologist David Winkler, and podcaster Marcus Axford of the Welcome to Oregon podcast, which, by the way, if you're not subscribing to that, you definitely should. Salt Creek Cider House will be there pouring drinks. El Pique Mexican Cuisine will be there with a food truck dispensing deliciousness. I'm hoping that the Adair Living History folks will want to come and participate in some way, but we'll see. I do hope you can join us. It'll be great to see you. We're in Building B, Polk County Fairgrounds, 520 South Pacific Highway, Rickreel. And again, that's Friday, May 29th, so that's the weekend after Memorial Day weekend, so you don't have to interrupt any vacation plans, hopefully. So yeah, I hope to see you there. Also, just so you know, because it is a fundraiser, there is a cover charge. It costs $10 to get in. Okay, now back to the Journal Man. The next story is a little bit longer and a little bit more rootin' tootin', I guess you could say. You will find it on page 63. Uncle John Bentley, Pendleton, Oregon. I had relatives, friends, and neighbors on both sides in the Civil War, and I didn't feel called upon to kill them as I would have been apt to do whichever side I joined. So I came west. I joined my older brother, Jefferson D., who had gone to California in 1850. I mined for a year or so, and then I ran a dairy for 5 years. In 1868, I was married to Mary Yoakum, whose father was killed by the Indians in 1854 while they were crossing the plains. In 1871, I moved to Yoakum, between Echo and Pendleton in Umatilla County. In 1872, I moved to Pendleton. That's a little more than 50 years ago. At that time, there was only 13 families and some unmarried young fellas living there. Dad Fraker and I did carpentering. One of the first jobs we landed was building a house for Jerry Despain out on McKay Creek. His widow, Nancy Despain, is here in Seaside now. I made all the window frames and doors and all the other finishing work by hand. The next job I got was building a house for the Reith brothers. In 1876, I started a planing mill at Pendleton. I sold it, but later had to take it back. Then I built a steam sawmill on the rim just below the bridge. When I pulled the whistle cord for the first time, every white person in Pendleton, to say nothing of the Indians, ran up to the banks of the Umatilla River to see if a steamboat had made its way up the river. After selling my steam sawmill at Pendleton, I bought one at Willow Springs on the Pendleton-Camas Prairie Road. It burned down. I lost $40,000 as I didn't have a cent of insurance. Pretty soon I made another stake. I bought 2,000 acres of wheat land and 2,200 acres of grazing land. I was one of the best-liked men in Pendleton, as I would always sign notes from my friends when they wanted to borrow money at the bank. Along come the panic of 1893, and all of the people whose notes I had signed went broke, so I had to pay the notes. I sold 647 acres of wheat land to Tom Hampton for $8,000, which later sold for $120,000. When I had cleaned up all my security debts, amounting well over $35,000, I was wiped off the map, financially speaking. I sold my 2,200 acres of grazing land to the Cunningham Sheep and Land Company at $3 an acre to get enough money to square the last of these debts. When times got good again, I hoped the people whose notes I had signed as an accommodation would pay me, but all I ever got back from my $35,000 loss was $65. I still have a pile of notes 3 inches high, but all they're good for is to paper the wall, as they are outlawed. I was one of the first constables in Pendleton. I also served as assessor. I was a United States Deputy Marshal, my district extending from the Dalles to the Blue Mountains. I also served as sheriff of Umatilla County. J.H. Turner and I owned the East Oregonian for a while. We sold it to L.B. Cox. He sold it to C.S. Jackson. In his valedictory, Cox said he had bought the paper on jawbone, ran it on credit, and was selling it for cash, so nobody could say that he was not a successful newspaper man. Sometime I will tell you about many of the experiences I had when I was sheriff. I always wore a gun on the outside of my leg, not really to use, but just so folks would know I was sheriff. One day, a man come in and complained to the judge that Hank Vaughn and Doc Whiteley had robbed him. I went to Hank's place, 4 miles from Adams, to arrest him. Did I arrest him? Sure I did. He had made his brag that he would never be arrested. When Hank saw me drive up to the place, he come out with a rifle across his arm and his six-shooter in its holster. He said, "Sheriff, have you come out to get me?" I said, "Well, Hank, that's just what I was sort of figuring on doing." He said, "Have you got a warrant for me?" I said, "Yes, do you want to see it?" He shifted his gun so it lined up in my direction and said, "Do you aim to arrest me and take me in with you?" I said, "Hank, there's no call for you and me to start being unfriendly about this little matter, but I sort of figure you ought to come into Pendleton and fix it up." He said, "You go back to Adams and arrest Doc Whiteley and wait there for me. Along about an hour from now, I'll drift into Adams. You can sort of deputize me to help you bring in Doc Whiteley. That will be the best way to fix this thing up without making hard feelings between us." I said, "That suits me, Hank. I guess you'll make a good deputy." He came into Adams, and I turned Doc Whiteley over to him. He said, "You drive on ahead, Sheriff. I don't like to be seen in your company. I'll be in soon." I drove on about my business. Hank brought Doc Whiteley in and said, "What do you need?" I told him to bring in $1,000 in gold for each of them, and I would turn them both loose till the trial. He went out to some of the gamblers and saloon keepers and got $2,000 in gold and brought it to me, and I locked it in my safe. Then Hank hunted up the complaining witness, the chap that was going to appear against him at the trial. He took him into a saloon, counted out $2,000 in bills, and handing them to the saloon keeper said, "Keep this in your safe till after the trial. If Dick here disappears till the trial, hand it to him. If he appears against me, return it to me." Dick, the chap Hank and Doc Whiteley had robbed, said, "Give me a couple of the $20 gold pieces you got off me, and I'll beat it and stay out of sight till the case is dismissed. That's making $2,000 pretty easy." When the case come up, the witness could not be found, so the case was dismissed, and I returned the bail money to Hank. A few days later, the missing witness turned up and went to the saloon to get the $2,000 in the safe. The saloon keeper turned it over to him. When he tried to spend the money, he was the maddest man you ever saw. It was counterfeit money. Hank was a good-hearted chap, but there wasn't a very... One time he and I had a long, friendly talk. He cleared up several murder mysteries for me. He told me he had, for business or social reasons, had to kill 13 men. Some of them may have deserved to be killed, but Hank's method of disposing of them was too irregular. You remember how Hank died? He had a friend pull his boots off. Someone had bet him he would die with his boots on, and he didn't want to lose the bet. Oregon Journal, August 13th, 1923. It's the first I've heard of the bet about the boots, but it sure fits in with everything I've read and heard about Hank Vaughn. What a character. Well, that's it for this special weekend bonus episode, what you might call a announcement with benefits. I hope you can join us for the fundraiser show at the end of the month, and meanwhile, go out there and fill up the rest of the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.